Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Good afternoon and welcome to Protecting What Matters. My name is Eric Gorham. As you can tell, I'm not Barry. Barry is out of town at the moment. He's out on business and I'm filling in for him. So I think we have a good show. We'll be talking Alzheimer's disease with some good guests here in the 1 o'clock hour. And we were supposed to have Ryan Rendell on right now, or Rendell, I should say. He is the president of Turning Points over in Cal Poly there. And so far, he's not here. Maybe he'll be joining us soon. Hopefully, that's the case. But I guess we'll change gears a little bit. You know, one thing I've been watching is this gubernatorial race. And it's interesting to me. You see a lot of things on social media right now. Our DA is very much pushing Chad Bianco. We see Steve Hilton, and we're, you know, the party's kind of cut in half with these two. I think that that Bianco's pulling the more hard right, where Hilton is pulling the right, and the NPP, and maybe the left of center. And I'm hoping you guys will call in. I want you to show me where I'm wrong. I have a question, and I'll get to that question here shortly. But I want to know, especially from the Bianco supporters, how do you see his path to victory? And I'm not talking about the primary. I'm talking about how does he win the election, even if it is, and I don't think it will be, but if it's Hilton and Bianco, how does Bianco win? How does he pull the MPPs? How does he pull the center, the left of centers? I don't know how, and I want you guys to tell me how, because if you're not, this is my opinion, you can tell me how I'm wrong again. If Bianco has no chance of winning the general election, why are you voting for him? Why are you so behind him? Because that's how I see it. I don't see how he pulls it off. I don't know how he beats Hilton, and I definitely don't know how he could possibly win against a Democrat when you're only pulling the further right vote. And I'm not discounting that vote. I just enjoy strategy, especially political strategy. And I think, you know, again, I've been asking this question on social media a lot, and all I really get is I don't like Hilton. Well, if you want to be a loser, then that's great. If you can't find somebody that has a path to victory, then it's just totally ideological. And I can't get behind that. You know, there's no victory in being an ideologue. So tell me, I really want to know. I want to see the phone lines light up, and I want someone to explain to me, please, how this man wins. If he cannot pull even the right of center vote, how does he win? How does he win in a general election? Let's say somehow he gets, you know, the bigger part of the Republican vote in the primary. He beats Hilton. How does he win after that? I don't think he'll beat Hilton in the primary, but it's really too early for to make those arguments. A lot can happen. We've seen Eric Swalwell with go down in smoke, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he resigned from public service altogether yesterday. Let me know if I'm wrong on that one. I kind of hit the news, but I was pretty busy yesterday. But what I've seen from Hilton, and I'm not saying I think one's better than the other. Here's my opinion. This is my opinion. I'll put it out there very quickly. If you're a conservative in California, you have to find the most conservative candidate that can win. That's not meaning you have to find the most conservative candidate. It's the most conservative candidate that can win an election. And if you don't go with that person, you're doomed to lose. I literally believe, you know, Bianco at this point, he goes up against any Democrat, he loses by 20 points easy. and tell me where I'm wrong, because he's not, he's only pulling from the far right for the most part. Now, a lot of people have argued, well, Trump endorsed Tilton. Well, he did. But I would argue that Bianco is still the far right candidate. That's the platform. Hilton maybe got the, maybe Trump thinks like I do. I don't know. I'm not saying he does, but he's trying to pick the most conservative candidate that can win and put his support behind that person. And I don't know if that support actually gets a win in California. I don't know that that's a good thing for Hilton that he gained President Trump's endorsement due to the fact that we live in a heavily populated progressive slash left of center state. So, and a lot of people in this state that are left of center, really further out. But even a lot of left of center, a lot of the right of center don't like Trump. I hate to say it. So where do we go? And, I'd really like to know. I'd really like to hear from you, the people that are behind Chad. How does he win? And again, you can give us a call at 238-5775, 238-KPRL, or you can text to the same number, 238-5775. So when you're texting, dial that 805-238-5775. Give us a text. Let me know the text line is working. Usually I test it out before I get here. But I really, I'm interested to know, and here's what I've seen from Hilton, and it, to some degree, rubs the right, especially the wrong way. You know, he has come out in favor of certain things that would be, you know, more geared towards the left, but I think he's doing that to win an election. I think he's doing that to put California, you know, right now we're in a place in California that if you had someone left of center, someone right of center, it doesn't take anyone far to the right to try to right this ship. We're in a bad place. And realistically, when I look at who's running on the liberal ticket, I don't see anyone, not anyone that's a front runner anyway, that isn't going to spend more money, that isn't going to put us into more debt, that isn't going to start more problems, that isn't going to keep dividing our state. And that's a problem to me. So here we go. You know, I don't know what the answer is, but I do know that Hilton is reaching out left of center. He is definitely going for the MPP, and I hate to tell you a secret. Your local party has been reaching out to MPPs. We need them. We need them to win. In this state, I believe they're about 22 to 30%, depending on where you're at. So we'll just go with the lower number for the whole state, 22% of the electorate. Here in California, I believe we are about somewhere between 34 and 35% of the electorate is considered conservative. You know, if we can embrace the MPPs and left of centers, guess what? We can win elections. And we don't do that by being overly too far to the right. No matter where you stand, it's not a winning combination. And I'm not trying to say anybody's wrong, you know. I'm just trying to say, how do you win in the state? How do you not lose by 20 points every time we run somebody? You know, how do we get somebody back as governor? And if we do, how successful are they going to be at changing things? It's a step in the right direction, I will tell you that. And I honestly believe if we can get these two Republicans as the winners in the primary, which, you know, so far they've been polling back and forth that way. When I look at the polls overall, I know if you're on Facebook, you see Bianco probably posting more when he's winning polls. When I'm actually looking at the polls, I see Hilton generally ahead. I see Bianco a lot of times in second. Occasionally, he is coming to first and a good part of the time in third. With Eric Strawell gone, we'll see where that goes. I don't know. But, you know, and I'm going to keep putting this out here until somebody calls or this half hour ends. I want to know what the path for Bianco is. How does he win? How does he win the election? I think, you know, you could give him odds for winning the primary, but what does that do? Honestly, what does it do? It gives us, especially if Hilton can't come in second in the primary, it hands us a loss immediately. I hate to say it, but it's true. Unless somebody can come change my mind. You know, there's that guy out there on social media that asked the liberals to change their minds. I'm going to ask the more conservatives on here, change my mind. Tell me how he can win. I see the passion. I see the posts. I see the arguments. Why you like him and why you don't like Hilton, but not who can win. And at the end of the day, it's who can win. So please let me know. I want at least some strategy. I've been asking that question for about 3 weeks now, and literally getting, I already told you this, you know, Hilton bad, me like Bianco. I hate to say it. It's not the greatest argument, you know. And I know as conservatives, we tend to be more set in our ways. We tend not to let our minds get swayed. But, you know, in this case, you know, and maybe I'm trying to sway your mind. Maybe I'm trying to, but I'm trying to do it in a way that shows, just show me who can win. And get behind the winner, you know, and it would be nice if we could get those two in. I kind of doubt it's going to happen, but I don't see how it wins. We do have a text here. Let's go there. I'm so glad you're talking about this. I'm a reformed Dem and now an MPP voter, and I will support Hilton for exactly the reasons you've laid out. And again, I'm not overly trying to push this, but I generally don't understand how Bianco has a chance. There, in my opinion, he has no chance. He cannot even pull the MPPs. He will divide that vote. If he's lucky, he'll get a small portion of that vote. He's not going to get the left of center, at least not very much of it. You know, right now, Hilton's polling at about in the 20s for MPPs, and that's across a lot of different candidates. So he's got almost a quarter of the MPP behind him right now. I know a lot of people are undecided, especially on the left. There's entirely too many candidates, but that's, you know, the front runner is out. Looks like he might even be in some legal trouble. So let's see where it goes. But again, what I see Hilton doing is reaching out. Now, I don't like or endorse all the programs that he's pushing, but if the greater part of California does, and he's the more conservative that can win, why wouldn't I support that? Why do we as conservatives sit there and get so poignant on it has to be this person? He doesn't have a chance to win, but it has to be this person. And I'm trying to understand that, and I really hope we get a few phone calls, because when I know I post this stuff on Facebook, you know, you get a storm, you know, and maybe that's the keyboard warriors out there, but you get a storm of, you know, this is this and that. You know, I haven't got anything coherent. You know, I talked to one person and I understand her point. Her point was, you know, she met the man, didn't like the man, didn't like the way he was trying to move on, or, you know, I won't get into all the details, but I can understand that somebody rubs you the wrong way. But then we still have to have strategy. If somebody, you know, not all leaders are well liked, it's whether you're well respected. Now, you know, that's one question I didn't think to ask her. You know, do you respect a person? Do you respect their platform? Because I've worked for a lot of people and I've led a lot of people that probably don't like me, and people that I didn't like necessarily personally, but I respected them. I respected the job they did. I respected the decisions they made. I respected their fairness, if I can speak here. And to the end of it, can you respect a person? Can they win? Are they the most conservative candidate? That, to me, is 100% of what matters. And good afternoon and welcome to Protecting What Matters. You're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I have an opinion on this race.
Okay.
Some things that I heard from a gentleman out of Northern California. He's up near Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And he's quite a businessman. He's connected with a lot of economic issues and real estate and loans and all kinds of things like that. And he interviewed Chad Bianco, and I watched that interview. Bianco seems to be, like you said, very conservative. And on the other hand, Steve Hilton seems to be able to pick and choose a lot of his issues.
Mm-hmm.
But this gentleman said that he seems to think that Bianco is going to beat him. And the reason being is that there are so many people with EDS in this state and that hate the president so much that when he endorsed Steve Hilton, that automatically he lost a lot of support. And he seems to think that he will be the victor, that Bianco will be the victor when it comes down to it.
And I do agree with you. I think I spoke to that earlier. I think that endorsement might have hurt Hilton more than helped him in this state. I don't think that's the case in every state, but definitely in California.
Right.
I would say without a doubt that Bianco is the more conservative, farther to the right candidate. So it really depends if people look at substance over just words or endorsements. I don't know how that'll work. And I do believe that Bianco can win. And, of course, in this state, it's whoever gets the top vote. So it could be two Democrats, could be two Republicans, could be a Republican and a Democrat. I guess what I'm trying to argue is after the primary, does Chad have a chance of winning? I don't believe he has a chance of winning.
Well, that's when you'll find out if people are sick and tired of things. That's where you're going to find that. Like this morning, there's all this stuff about the price of fuel and everything. Well, it's got to break somewhere. It can't keep going like it is. And that in turn makes the price of food and everything else goes up. When oil goes up, everything goes up.
No, I believe you're right. And I also believe
people don't see that. They think, it's an oil company. So, it's kind of like this. If you're selling a car and two people are bidding on it and somebody says, but, they're going to give you a certain price for it, and another guy comes in and wants to give you a considerable amount more, what are you going to do?
Exactly.
What the market will bear. So it's like, if you're a capitalist, that's one thing. Cars cost different money depending on what the vehicle is. So you make the best deal that you can make.
Right.
And that's what the oil companies are doing.
It's
called make hay while the sun shines.
Oh, exactly. And I think, unfortunately, in this state and really in our country, and maybe I'm jaded. I might be coming across jaded the last couple of weeks because I feel that we have a populace, especially in California, but really in America, there's a certain degree that generally fly under that liberal banner that have been enslaved by the party. They've been shown they don't own their party. They're owned by their politicians. They do what politicians want instead of making politicians. And I think that's a fault overall in our country, but I see that more because of the enslavement due to incentives, due to welfare. There's a million different incentives that have been handed out to enslave people. And they think the government's here to help me. And we all know, Ronald Reagan, what he had said, if somebody knocks on your door and says, I'm here from the government and I'm here to help you, you should run the other direction.
Right.
Every single time.
Well, the other thing is, too, if you look at the populace, okay, and the demographics, you have a lot of people that are on the dole here, okay, in this state, and they're going to vote to what benefits them, okay? That's going to keep that train running. The other people... There's another group.
We're going to run out of time, sir. I apologize, but we'll be right back with Protecting What Matters. I hope you'll join us. And welcome back to Protecting What Matters. Again, my name is Eric Gorham. I'm filling in for Barry. He's out on assignment this week, out in the insurance world. But he will be back next week. And, you know, if I knew the show, I'd tell you about it. But, we do have, you won't have to listen to me obloviating in the next hour. We have the Alzheimer's Association of California. We have a young woman from Cal Poly going to tell her mother's story. We're going to be going over a few things here, but, and I think one more importantly, I think we're going to hit, what dementia is and what Alzheimer's is, because I think that gets interchanged quite a bit, and it's not really interchangeable. There's a difference there. So we'll be talking about those things. If you have questions on those, get them ready. Again, we are almost out of time for this half an hour. We have a couple texts here. If you want to call in, now is the time. 238-5775, 238-KPRL, or text your questions or comments in, because we'll be running out of time here shortly. I have a few texts. The first one. Steve Hilton is likable. Chad Bianco comes across as an arrogant bully. You know, and I've heard that. I don't know that he's a bully or anything, but the first time I met him was about 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. I'm trying to remember. He was at another radio station that I was a guest on. He was walking out. He had not yet thrown his hat in, but basically he was going around the state getting his name out there. He already knew he was going to run, and he was just trying to talk on things and kind of feel things out. And as I was walking in and he was walking out, he was the guest introduced him to me and told him, oh, this is a person in the Central Coast you probably want to know. He's on the Central Committee. He's out there doing a lot of radio, going to a lot of events, etc. And yeah, basically Chad stuck his nose up at me, walked by, didn't shake my hand. I thought, you know, maybe it looked like I had the plague or something, but that's just how he behaved that day. And I wasn't impressed by it, but to be honest with you, that doesn't seal the deal for me. You know, it doesn't make me not like him as a, you know, one thing I will tell you that bugs me about Chad is he spends entirely too much time on the Central Coast. This isn't going to get you the votes, buddy. I hate to tell you, you know, staying here, you want to know why Hilton hasn't come here that much? Because there's not enough votes. And when I see a candidate that comes to the Central Coast as much as Chad does, I think, well, he likes it here because people like him. But it's, you got to go out to the hard places. You got to go get knocked around a little bit and change people's minds about you, and it doesn't matter here. I hate to say it, you know, our votes do matter, but changing an electorate, and we don't have enough people. You know, we have what did Trump get? Anyway, it doesn't matter. We have millions of votes here. We're about a quarter, we're not even a quarter million. Now the next text we got here, I don't trust Bianco. He knelt for BLM and is a pro amnesty. People need to go look it up. And one thing I will say is don't take anybody's word for anything. Don't take my word. Don't go look things up. Find out for yourself. You know, Bianco has an excuse for that. I kind of look at it as more excuse oriented. It's an answer. Do I believe it? Not necessarily, but could it be true? Of course it could be. Go look things up. If somebody says something about Hilton, somebody says something about Bianco, go look it up for yourself. Go find the information. We live in a information heyday of an era, so you it's all out there. You can watch the videos. You can see for yourself. And, you know, don't just watch the 5-second clip. If it's a 5-minute clip, watch the whole 5 minutes, because context means everything. So now we are getting down to the end to it, and I'm still hoping someone out there will call me like right now, you know, here it is, 238-5775, and tell me how Bianco makes it and wins the primary, or not the primary, I'm sorry, the general election. I do believe, like the last caller, that he could win the primary, or he could come in second, you know, and to me, it's a tragedy if, Hilton isn't one or two, because I just don't know how Bianco does not lose by 20 points. And I keep repeating myself, but I'm doing it. I'm hoping some of you out there that are supporting this man will call me and tell me how, oh, this is the clear path, and maybe I missed it. I'm hoping I did, because we have two people running, and I think one of them has a chance of getting through the primary. I know a lot of people are hoping for two. I think the fact that we have the leader in the polls for the Dems, Eric Swalwell, is gone. So a lot of his vote is going to go probably between one or two other people, which will bring them up considerably in the polls. And he was polling second quite often. Again, Hilton polling in the number one place more often than not. Occasionally, Bianco was polling number one, but he's polled number one, number two, and number three quite often. Probably two and three more often than not, regardless of what social media tells us. So let's see what happens. You know, ideally we have two Republicans. I know that everybody is banking on that. I really don't know that that's going to happen, especially now that Swalwell's gone. We have the other two will get a bigger share of that vote. We also have about 25% of the Democratic vote undecided. That goes somewhere, and that's going to raise up, these other candidates once those decisions are made. So can we get one guy in? I think we can. Hopefully we can get two, but I think we can get one in. And honestly, get the one in, support the one that might be able to win an election, not the one that's going to lose by 20 points. I'm going to beat this dead horse until this show ends, to be honest with you, because it's very frustrating to me. I've heard it. And again, I don't think Chad's a bad guy. Don't think Hilton's a great guy. I, again, am imploring you to look at who is the most conservative candidate that can win a chance or that can win the race. Excuse me. Got a little sidetracked there. Who is it? Is it Bill? Is it Clinton? Is it is it Bianco? Is it Hilton? I would say almost undoubtedly that it's Hilton. Maybe you guys can talk about this a little more in the morning with Kevin. I'd love to turn on the show and have somebody explaining why I was wrong today. But if not, get out there, do your research. And the main thing is go out there and vote. Don't listen to anybody but yourself. Listen to what I said and find out. Do you think that's true? Is what I'm saying is true, or if I'm, am I off my rocker? Anyway, I hope you let me know, and I hope you stay tuned for the second half of Protecting What Matters.
Protecting What Matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Protecting What Matters. My name is Eric Gorham. Barry's out, and I believe he's out of the state, actually. I think he's out selling insurance or estate plan. I'm not sure exactly what he's doing, but I will tell you, Blazing Bear is the place to go. I don't know many people. I was in that industry for a few years, and Barry is probably the most knowledgeable person I've ever met within that space, especially, not that it crosses into this show, but if you're looking at, mine's going blank, of course, but, what is that insurance called when you get older?
Long-term care.
Yeah. Long-term care. He's probably one of the best in the nation, to be honest with you. And, not trying to push Barry, but the guy is, he knows his stuff. So give him a call. And we are here with the Alzheimer's Association of California Central Coast chapter. We have the president.
Program manager.
All right. I tried to give you a little bit of. That's
it's more title than what I would want.
So it's Laura Deloy, right?
Yes.
And then we have Amber Pepito, right? Pepito.
Yes, yes.
That name's going to get me one. I'm going to mess it up at some point, so you got to forgive
me
now.
Yeah.
But what's your role in this?
So I am currently just a volunteer with the Alzheimer's Association. Not just, yes, sorry. Right. But and then I also do in-person education as a volunteer. So that just means I'm like kind of working with the Alzheimer's Association when needed, and I'll be working at booths, spreading information. I work at the school as well at Cal Poly SLO. I recently graduated from there in December, but I still do presentations with Laura sometimes or by myself sometimes and just kind of talk about what we offer.
All right. And then before I turn over here to Laura, you guys have an event coming up. I don't know which one of you want to speak to it, but I think it's worth, we'll put it out here a few times, and it's it's the 9th, so, or the 19th, I'm sorry. So we, people, if you want to go, it's time to sign up, I guess.
Yes, coming up this weekend on Sunday, April 19th from 1 to 3 p.m. at J. Ducey Winery in Paso. We're hosting an event called Wise Woman and Wine. So we have 9 different local wineries coming to the event, providing some pours. We have a silent auction, and then I will be a guest speaker at the event, as well as a researcher known as Dr. Oz Ishmael, who's going to be speaking there as well. And we're just there kind of representing both women winemakers and wine owners, as well as kind of calling attention to how women are disproportionately affected by Alzheimer's.
All right. And is there a cost to this event? Is it free? Is it?
What's Yes. $50 a ticket. Okay. And then just a reminder, like the $50 gets you, again, wine tastings from 9 wineries, as well as just a great connection, education, and food as well.
And I will tell you that this, you know, you have Austin Hope, you have Epic, you have Rava. I mean, there's a whole, I'm not going to name everybody, but, you know, Austin Hope's probably worth the cost of admission right there. That's one of the premier wines, in my opinion, of this county, especially red. Say, there's not much better than that. Austin and I went to school together right down the street. We went to Flampson, actually, and high school. But
there's some great everything from sparklings and rosés to excellent good reds.
Right, there is some great wineries here, so it is worth showing up and learning a little bit. But speaking of learning a little bit, can you tell us a little bit about what you do here locally?
Yeah, for sure. So again, I'm Laura Deloy, Program and Education Manager for the Alzheimer's Association, and our chapter here is the California Central Coast. And the Alzheimer's Association is a national nonprofit, so we are across the country, chapters in every state. And we provide care and support for caregivers of those who have a loved one with dementia. So typically we're working with family caregivers at home, or if you have a loved one who's in a care facility, supporting them through just the what becomes 24/7 care, and how do you communicate with a person with dementia and better understanding those dementia behaviors that come out, whether it's wandering or repeated questions or maybe some personality changes and irritation and anger and those types of things, or hallucinations. And so we help to connect them to local resources around the area, as well as providing support groups throughout the county. So here in North County in Paso, we've got a monthly support group that meets at American Riviera Bank on the third Friday of the month, so I believe that's actually this week. And then also in Cambria, a monthly support group, monthly education class out there in collaboration with the Cambria Connection. And then in Atascadero, we have a support group that meets monthly at the library as well. And then an education series that we're working with the Oaks of Paso, assisted living and memory care. Okay. So a monthly education class there to really try to empower caregivers to be, you know, have some of those resources, and because they've never cared for their parent or their spouse with dementia before.
So, and I'm sure there's a lot of different processes going on there. There's that beginning where, you know, there's just a strain of it all, and that's probably what's wearing on you daily. But there's a lot of different phases to this, and them having the ability to learn from you guys what to expect next, what's coming, what could happen.
Absolutely.
Is probably invaluable. You know, I was literally Friday, I had my yearly physical, and I was at my doctor's office, and he said, I have to take this call. I should go in the next room, but we're not going to talk names. You know what I mean? And it was a couple. They're both elderly. They both have dementia at this point, and the husband has now become violent. And he kind of just, you know, I don't know the names. I don't know where they live or anything else, but he gave me a little, he's like, this is the nicest couple. They've been my people forever. And now that with his violence, it's changed everything, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that's just one of the many cogs that you...
Right, yeah. And, you know, and it is it's a neurological disease. So it's everything that our brain processes is up for confusion or change. And so oftentimes that can be personality. And some of the different types of diseases under the dementia umbrella Lewy body dementia, frontal temporal dementia particularly, can have more of that personality change. And that's oftentimes what's noticed before maybe short-term memory loss. And so then it's like, whoa, wait a minute, what happened with mom, who used to be really easygoing and now is struggling with, you know, maintaining social connections because mm-hmm. she doesn't have a filter anymore. And so it's kind of understanding that and knowing that it's a disease and not just the person trying to, you know, be manipulative or whatever that might be, because that comes across a lot. And how do we deal with, you know, aging parents? And, well, if, you know, if you're an adult child and maybe you've had some issues as a teenager, you know, it's like those things can really come back. Or helping spouses to understand that it's not just going through a different phase in life. It's, I mean, it does right. become that, but really kind of better understanding what's going on so that you're educated and not having to just poke around in the dark. And
I would imagine for the person going through this, you know, especially towards the beginning where you're realizing this is happening, there couldn't be much scarier.
Absolutely. That is, thank you for bringing that up, because it is. There's so,
I mean, you could act out. Loss, I think right? I would act out just because of that.
Absolutely. You know? I mean, you know, you stub your toe in the middle of the night. When you're upset, right.
right?
I mean, let alone like knowing that there's this potential for such loss.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a term called ambiguous loss or anticipatory grief. Similar things where, you know, you have this whole plan, like whether you're, you know, at a retirement age or older or younger, as, you know, we'll hear with Amber's story of her mom, that we're not great with change as humans.
Right.
You know, we get along with it. But
especially the older we get. We get very settled in our ways. You know, that's something I've personally been fighting. I realized at some point in my life, I'm like, I'm getting a little stubborn. I need to change things up a little bit.
And it's like, when you have these plans and you have these dreams, and then it's right. like, oh, this is all going to change. And
right.
Yeah. So trying to, you know, help people to make some of those decisions, you know, let your family know, let your friends know, like what's going on, so that, right. you know, we can come around as a community and support mm-hmm. one another.
So Amber, I kind of want to get into your story, because mm-hmm. I think there's a handful of things we can get into, but I kind of like people to relate to a situation, and every situation is of course going to be different, but your mother had Alzheimer's or...
Yes. So there's definitely like such a process to getting diagnosed with this disease as well. So when I was 18 years old, I was a senior in high school, year 2020. My mom started noticing, let's say, her symptoms a bit more, but we definitely like probably noticed them earlier. We just kind of, you know, we're like, yeah, she's stressed out and there's a lot going on. So you can kind of push it away or say it's not that big of a deal. But then I think it gets to a point where you're like, all right, now this is really affecting the way she's, you know, working and the way she's around the house. And I think one of the biggest things we saw was like her getting lost while driving or not remembering the password to her phone and thinking we kept changing it when it was, you know, the same the whole time. So then my dad brought her in and we did some cognitive tests, and they told her immediately she should stop driving was one of the biggest things. They're like, okay, no more driving for you. So I remember driving her to her appointment where they told us the news, and we were sat in the doctor's office. It was just me and her, and they started relaying how poorly she did on the cognitive tests. They're like, okay, you scored in the bottom 1 percentile of all these people that tested. That means you did really bad. And I mean, they gave it to us straight, but it was still like, oh gosh, like, okay. And again, I'm only 18 years old. So I was like, wow, this is a lot, because I'm supposed to go to college next year and my mom is not having a great memory. Like, we were like, what's going to happen? They gave her the diagnosis of rapid early onset Alzheimer's. So that was what we were first told it was. And I relayed that to my dad and my brother. And we were like, okay, well, we have to figure out what this is. The only information we were provided by doctors were a few pamphlets that were basically like, here's a home she could live in. Here's the definition of Alzheimer's. And if you have any questions, this is something, someone who could answer it possibly. And I remember being like, okay, well, like, we're not going to use these. Like, my mom is only 58 years old and she doesn't look like these people on the pamphlet. And I think I remember being very frustrated as well and saying, this isn't supposed to happen right now. Like, I'm supposed to experience this when I have kids and my mom's a grandma, you know? And, so it was just unique in that sense. And kind of going into college after that was hard because I wanted to move away. You know, I wanted to do my own thing and she wanted me to do that as well. She was a teacher for over 20 years and she was like, you need to go to school. You need to get an education. You need to travel, do all the things that you love. So that was great. And she pushed me out of the house, which I appreciate. And I don't regret that. And, but when I was out of the house, it was hard to get calls from my dad or my brother and saying, you know, your mom is acting out, you know, she's becoming irrational. She's having really bad hallucinations. You know, she thinks that you're not safe because I wasn't in the house. She was getting these really bad ideas in her head that I was like getting kidnapped or I wasn't safe or someone was taking me. And it was really interesting to see it because it was like, how is she coming up with this in her head? I just don't understand. I'm on the phone right in front of her, but she can't like perceive me on the phone. It was really interesting. So, yeah, once it was, you know, getting violent with her and she started, you know, acting out in a more violent way towards my family, I decided to, like, try and talk to doctors about it. I was like, I'll get it figured out. I'll try to find something, you know. And I called a bunch of doctors. I would look up, like, psychologists and call them. And I'd be like, hey, like, my mom, she got diagnosed with Alzheimer's. Like, I just have a few questions. And they were like, oh, yeah, that sounds great. Like, we can't answer that, but maybe you should try this kind of doctor. And so I went through that process, I want to say about 8 to 10 times, and all of them sent me on to the next. And I was so frustrated. I just ended up looking up Alzheimer's because I was like, hey, there's got to be something on the internet, right? And that's when the Alzheimer's Association came up. Their website popped up, and immediately there was a hotline number really big on their website. Called them. Was like, hey, my mom has Alzheimer's. Like, can you answer these questions, please? And they're like, yeah, of course. Like, what do you got? And they were able to give me all these answers. They were able to email me pamphlets of information after our call. And it was so relieving to hear that. And we ended up posting that number on our refrigerator for friends or family who were there for my mom to call if she needed. And they became a great resource. And we got very involved in them really quickly, which was super awesome. And, my mom ended up passing away 2 years ago in March, so that was a whole nother thing. But I ended up getting more involved with the Alzheimer's Association after that. What I missed, though, was she was later diagnosed with Lewy bodies dementia, which is a little bit different. So it was kind of a misdiagnosis at first, which was also a whole nother thing. but yeah, got involved. That's how I started volunteering here at the Central Coast with Laura and doing all the in-person education stuff.
Okay. And do we see a lot of misdiagnoses, or is it fairly common?
Yeah, it's not uncommon because with dementia, it's really trying to eliminate other possibilities of what it might be, whether that's low sodium count or dehydration or, you know, any variety of other things that is causing this confusion. But then it is, and as well, when a person is younger, like Amber's mom, it's not always taken into consideration that this is really the truth and what they're experiencing. So it takes a bit of time, and it is a diagnosis over time, so a couple of years, because you got to see what those changes are.
Let me ask you a question. You can feel free to tell me, like, you don't know what you're talking about, because I don't. I mean, but I've heard this, and I've heard this in other countries when they talk about, you don't hear Alzheimer's in other countries. Mm-hmm. You hear more, I've heard more of the fact of phase 3 diabetes, and it's a sugar imbalance in the brain.
There is a part that they're saying, or that it can be called, or kind of labeling it as a type 3 diabetes. There's a lot of involvement.
It's not true. I'm not making the argument. I'm just asking because it seems like it would be easy to test for if that was the case. If I'm wrong, just say you don't know what you're talking
about. Not completely wrong, but not completely okay. All of what's involved.
Well, that's why I'm asking. You know what I mean? I'm sure other people have heard that.
Like, in across the world. There are countries, all countries have Alzheimer's disease.
Okay.
So in dementia, the definition, it's a variety of our cognitive elements. So whether that's attention span, short-term memory loss, judgment, perception, all of these things that give us the ability to have cognitive functioning, right, gets mangled up somehow.
Right.
Very technical term. But you have this dementia umbrella, and then underneath that umbrella, there are about 100 different diseases that have dementia as their symptom. So Alzheimer's disease is the most prevalent.
Right. I get it.
Of other ones.
And we do have a call, so let's take that. Good afternoon, and welcome to Protecting What Matters.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question, just looking for, you know, some advice or guidance. My mother's 79, will be 80 in October, and she was diagnosed a little over a year ago, year and a half ago, at Samson Clinic, Santa Barbara, with, you know, with early Alzheimer's. And she, you know, we've been watching this progress over the last 4 or 5 years, and it was really, really hard to get her to, you know, to go to the neurologist and to go to the clinic and undergo all this testing. It was very combative. And she, and, you know, so they diagnosed her, and then there was a follow-up appointment. She just refused to go. And
can we put you on hold just for a moment? We got to go to a commercial break. I apologize for that, but I'm going to put you on hold. Thank you. And we'll be right back with Protecting What Matters. And welcome back to Protecting What Matters. Sometimes you get into those conversations off air and you forget that you got to go back on air. But back to our caller. Sir, you're back if you want to complete your question.
Hey, sure. So I'll just get to the point here. My mother is extremely combative and denial. She refuses to, to go to any treatment. And, refuses to accept that she has this diagnosis. And we're at the point now where, you know, you'll have a 10-minute conversation with her, and 5 minutes later, she has no idea that you ever even had the conversations. Mm-hmm. So I just, trying to figure out what the next step is mm-hmm. to take care of her. I just don't know. I don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, well, thanks for calling in, and also just really sorry that you're dealing with all of that, and that is definitely why we exist as the Alzheimer's Association. You know, some of that is meeting her where she is, because it's certainly frustrating for her as well as it's frustrating for you and your family. Some of what we talk about are fiblets, or some people call them white lies, but it is how, you know, instead of perhaps it's not setting up your mom to say, okay, well, we've got a doctor's appointment on Thursday and today's Tuesday, and she's going to get more and more frustrated and she's just going to refuse to go to that doctor's appointment. And then come Thursday morning, it's like, nope, I'm not going with you. Get out of my house. All of those things is not uncommon. Like, I want you to know that. It doesn't make it any easier. But it also, you know, trying to say, okay, so if you go over on Thursday morning and say, no, we've got a doctor's appointment, she might not still want to go with you, but perhaps say, hey, you know what? Let's go out for a drive. We're going down to Santa Barbara or wherever you need to drive to for it, and you just have a drive, and then you end up at the doctor's office. It seems manipulative, and I don't want to encourage manipulation of your parents and your older adult friends, but sometimes that is what it takes to be able to get the person to an appointment.
And not to interrupt, but I feel like maybe getting that number out that you had, you said Absolutely. There was an 800 number. I feel like this is a longer conversation right. that he should be contacting you guys.
Yeah,
and maybe definitely. If you can give him and our audience the number, that's a good starting point.
Yeah, and it sounded like you were driving, but definitely you can look, as Amber shared earlier, go to our website, alz.org, or just Google search for Alzheimer's Association. It'll come right up. But our 24/7 helpline number is 1-800-272-3900. So again, 1-800-272-3900. And there's always somebody you will talk to, a human. There's always a variety of languages that are spoken. So Spanish is also available there. You can ask for a care consultation, and then you'll talk with a licensed social worker as well if you need some more in-depth conversation and things like that. But I hope that helps, and my heart goes out
to you. Thank you so much. It's a really crazy situation. Mm-hmm. My mom's husband is, I think he's 13 or 14 years younger than mm-hmm. her, and I think he's in complete denial too, or he's just going crazy. And what's really weird about it, and what's sad for him, is that his dad passed away from Alzheimer's when he was in high school, so he's already lived this whole thing, and now here he's going through it again. But
So I would say certainly reaching out for some additional support, and you know, whether you're up here or anywhere else, we definitely have support groups around that can. These are great questions to bring in and find what others are doing as well. But I would definitely reach out for our 24/7 helpline too.
All right, sir. Well,
thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Thank
you. Thanks for calling.
And I'm sure that's, you know, you've heard a lot of this.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure, you know, on when you have somebody affected by this, they probably don't know where to reach out. And I think mm-hmm. probably one of your chief things is just getting the word out, educating the public that you're here.
Absolutely. So much so. And that's like, whether it's our website or our helpline number, we'll go out and do a lot of awareness presentations, as Amber was sharing before too. And you know, whether that's a Rotary Club or at a church or whatever that might be. So we're always available to do that as well and set those kinds of appointments up so that people know that there are those resources out there. Because things have changed a lot, you know, whether it was, you know, your grandparents had dementia. A lot of times we'll get that, but it's like, well, but now my husband has it and it's really different. And it is. Because every person is different with that disease.
And I think it brings us back to this event this weekend. I mean, showing up, I'm sure there's a lot of good information. Mm-hmm. Amber, you're one of the speakers.
Yes.
So you get to you hear more about this. And then what about your, I guess this is your main speaker, and I don't want to mess his name up, but I'll let you mess his name up.
Yeah, so Dr. no, it's all right. He just says, call me Dr. Oz. Oz Ismail, he's the Alzheimer's Association Director of Scientific Programs. So he's coming out to speak particularly about the effects of dementia in women, because we have a higher predisposition for dementia, and oftentimes are, you know, also caregivers. And also talking then about brain health as well. And that's what I know, like, being on Protecting What Matters previously, we often talk about those brain health components and how can we decrease our risk in getting these diseases and at an earlier age, at Amber's age, right? you know, whether it's maintaining an exercise routine or cognitive exercise, keep learning, and you know, learning a new language, learning an instrument, whatever that might be, and how our diet is, and making control of those numbers of our health. So whether it's our cholesterol or blood pressure or the diabetes, and trying to really, you know, maintain that. So
I think why this one's going to mess me up. Wise women and wine.
Wise women and wine.
You can come out this Sunday, enjoy some great wine, and what's the information on that? And where can people look it up?
Yeah.
Yes. If you just look up Wise Women and Wine and Alzheimer's Association on like any search engine, it should pop up under a few websites. We've had some people posting about it, like different wineries, as well as like the Paso Daily News, I think, posted as well. So the link is there for you guys, but we also are taking people at the door. So day of the event, if you just want to show up at 1 p.m. at J. Ducey Winery, we'll be there and we can sort you out with tickets.
Perfect, perfect. And yeah, there's probably quite a bit to learn there. If this show is pushing a button, this might be something you want to attend.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, one thing I was wondering about, and so I've never necessarily dealt with Alzheimer's. I've met people that have it, etc. But I guess, like my grandmother, what we were told she had was sundowners. And of course, throughout the day, as the day progressed, she kind of, you know, I remember going in at 4 o'clock and she couldn't believe how I got there. And I couldn't understand what she was talking about, but she thought we were on a cruise ship. And of course, she was with everybody that she was with on the cruise had since passed. And there were the people from her childhood that probably meant the most. And I'm now dealing with my mom, who's getting on different medications, trying things, but and hers is a form of dementia too. So the differences in that, I think, is something maybe we want to broach.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, so again, like dementia is that kind of like when we talk about cancer, and then we ask, oh, what kind of cancer do you have? So in a similar kind of sense, when we have dementia, then it's also, well, what kind? Is it Alzheimer's disease? Is it Lewy body dementia? Is it vascular dementia, frontal temporal dementia? Those are the most common ones. And they all have a lot of similarities and yet also quite different, whether that's what processes are getting involved in the brain or the length of time of the disease process or kind of how it progresses. So they're all a progressive disease process. It's not something that, oh, we'll treat and we can stop, right? At this point in time, that's where the research is, you know, working towards. But looking at something like Alzheimer's disease, it's typically just a continual gradual decline. And it can be 10 years, it can be 15, 8, 20 years. But then with vascular dementia, what we used to call, or people would have trans ischemic attacks, TIAs, little mini strokes, multi-infarct dementia, it's kind of all the same kind of labelings that have been over the years, but that will go by kind of a stepwise motion, like kind of just holding on and then have this mini stroke and then there's a step down. Mm-hmm. It's like, whoa, mom really has, she went down fast this past week, and it's like, yeah, there was something, but that happened, but then she'll stabilize and then have another of those mini strokes, and it kind of just goes that stepwise type of thing. Whereas like Lewy body dementia, frontal temporal dementia, that can be seen more often in a younger, you know, like, because usually at 65 years of age is when we start seeing more the possibility for Alzheimer's disease or vascular dementia, but other diseases can, you know, can be seen earlier on to a younger onset type of thing.
So let me ask this. I mean, there's, well, I'm gonna switch it up. I have a question. Totally different question. And I remember years ago there was a movie that came out, and I don't know how realistic it was. I'm sure you saw it. It was, I can't remember the name. It's like Alice.
Still Alice. Yes.
How real is that? Was that a real thing?
That movie, I remember, ruined my life. Like, I was like, this is too accurate to a point where I like am now like worried and scared. It just gave me like, it was just like, wow, they like depicted it really well. I think the way that the main character kind of showed her confusion, like, mm-hmm. I think there's even a part where she like wets herself and she has an accident. It's like really embarrassing for her. And
well, that's what got me. She's who got me. I get the rest of it. I had never looked at it from that person's perspective, and that movie makes you look at it.
They did a great job, especially with her diagnosis. I think she has Alzheimer's in it,
it was like a young onset.
Yes, it was like, I, in my own situation, like I related it so much to my mom because I was like, that's exactly what she had. And my mom was a huge fan of that book and movie, which like, oh my gosh, like why would she like this? But yeah, it was interesting. It was they did a good job. I think like the one thing that threw me off was the testing of like the children, which is something that they did where it's like your kids can get tested and see if they have like the gene for it or they carry. And so that's what scared me. That's why I was like, this movie ruined my life. It was just because I was like, oh gosh, like I might carry that gene. But that's also something that goes into brain health, where I learned now that I've gotten more education around Alzheimer's and dementia, is you may carry the gene, but if you keep up with your health and you're a healthy person, you're, you know, getting out and doing those brain healthy things. So you're eating right and you're walking, you're socializing, and you keep up and doing these things regularly for a long time, it will lower your chances of actually, you know, experiencing the disease, even if you carry the gene.
So there's a lot of websites out there. You know, the Hearts Association has a heart healthy diet. Do you guys have that on your website? Is there?
Yeah, there is. There was a big study that came out last year called the U.S. Pointer Study, and it talks about that, specifically the diet. And yeah, certainly, like what the American Heart Association has, it, what we educate about, what's good for your heart is good for your brain, because okay, so much of the blood that's pumped by the heart goes to feed the brain as well. And so, you know, you can't have one without the other, really. And so yeah, so whether it's decreasing our highly processed foods, increasing kind of that Mediterranean diet, mm-hmm, basically, mm-hmm, right, is that, you know, leaner meats, more vegetables, leafy greens, olive oil.
Those probably like things. A lot of good cholesterol, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I think in your brain, one of the main consumption units of cholesterol, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not a health person. I just like
I just play one.
Yeah, exactly. But I know I that was coming to my mind. But I was like, if I say this, I could be totally BS in my way through this. But I could have sworn I've heard that before. Mm-hmm. So the movie, is it something you would recommend?
I would say watch it, but also keep an open mind, because it's definitely like learn with it. I would say maybe like it was definitely. I mean, I watched it and I was like, oh, they're literally like talking about the Alzheimer's Association, but I just didn't perceive that. I was like, right, oh, I could use that as a resource, but I just didn't, like, so I would say learn with it and just don't take it like that's going to happen to me, you know, like, because
right,
again, it's different for each individual and for that character, Alice, like that was her situation. That's what happened with her kids, you know? But yeah, it's different with everyone, but yes, it is a good movie to watch if you really want to get a perspective of it. There's also other resources. There's even like Dementia Live simulations if you really want to like learn. Recently I was actually involved with one, and it's a simulation. Sometimes they have them. I know that we offered it at my school because one of the teachers had access to them, but I got to like put on headphones and gloves and do tasks and learn what it felt like to have dementia, maybe try and do basic tasks while, you know, your brain's all over the place. So there's other ways to also learn that's not maybe just from a movie and that, right, you can actually experience. So
no, I just remember when I watched that, I think I didn't know anybody. I, like I said, yeah, I'd met people, but it was just like, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. It like kind of hits you in a way, yes, where, yeah, even if you're not affected by it, you're like, man, this is insane.
Yeah. And I think that really that important part of like putting it in the eyes of the perspective of the person who's dealing with this, mm-hmm, right? And her world just totally turned upside down. And, you know, and I remember that on that too, in the book or and in the movie where, you know, she had this on the computer where all of her passwords, mm-hmm, but then it was like, okay, when I get to this spot, like, this is what I want you to do. And she kept checking into that every day and it becomes a routine. But mm-hmm, it, yeah, it's a very powerful movie.
Yes.
And it also, I believe she was like a professor of linguistics or something. And that was what she lost, was her work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's not an unusual space, you know, and you know, whether you're, we have a lot of engineers in our county here particularly. And it's, I mean, I hear that so many times where it's like, oh, he was like brilliant and he had this high education, and it doesn't mean that you won't get this disease process. Like it's, mm-hmm, it's not discriminatory,
right,
no matter what you've done for your life. And at the same time, there are things that we can do to help delay that onset.
So is this something that's more hereditary, or is it indiscriminate, or
both? Yeah, there are typically what they're seeing for there's the APOE4 gene. And if you have two markers of that, that is, your likelihood is pretty great that you're going to get the disease. But it's not telling you that you're going to get it at 62 or at 78 or at 92, right? Mm-hmm. So you're predisposed for it. So it is keeping track of, you know, what your health is like, what are your screenings doing, and that type of thing. When we have somebody in our immediate family, you know, parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, that increases our risk. But it's not, okay, you have this, your mom had it, so therefore you're going to have it.
Right.
It's not like the receding hairline or whatever. There's, you know, there's connect.
Right. Your dad's dad is bald.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we're getting close to a break, but maybe we should hit up this Wise Women and Wine one more time.
Yeah,
and
definitely. Then people should come out to this.
We yes. still got to get to Riley at we the do. Top yeah. when we get out okay. of this
we'll
break.
We'll talk about some volunteering.
That's but yeah. let's look at this one more time. Kind of tell us what the speakers are going to be speaking about, where it is, and yeah. How to get involved and get out there.
So Wise Women and Wine this Sunday, April 19th, 1 to 3 at J. Ducey Winery on 46 West. $50 for a ticket. You can search online for Wise Women and Wine and Alzheimer's Association, and you'll find a link that way. You can come join us at the door. You can, any of those ways. And if you can't make it, feel free to make a donation as well. All of the funds go to the Alzheimer's Association, help support our support groups here and education classes and research.
So will this be more of a presentation given, or is there question and answers, or what's the kind of
yes.
the format?
So, yes. you know, yes. So Holly Ann Lewis, a local singer-songwriter, is going to provide some music with us. And then Amber's going to speak to about her story, and then also Dr. Oz Ishmael, from a director of scientific programs at the Alzheimer's Association, is going to speak about brain health and the effects of dementia on women. But it's a time to have some tastings of wine from 9 amazing wineries mm-hmm. in our area, from Epic and Cypher and Rava and Rockbound and McPrice Myers.
Brick and Mortar, yeah.
Brick and Mortar is going to do some catering as well for us. So, yeah, come out and join us. Sunday,
awesome, awesome.
April 19th.
So we have a little bit of time left when we come back from break, and we're going to meet one last guest. She's been sitting here tapping her feet, looking at us, wondering when she gets her turn here. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with Protecting What Matters. And welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We have Riley here. You're a volunteer?
Yes. So I'm Riley Coomber. I'm a third year at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, and I've had the lovely opportunity to be the Alzheimer's Association's newest intern under Laura. So I'm doing a lot of helping out with those support groups and education programs and just getting out into the community and spreading awareness and information and helping, you know, those family members and those caregivers find the support that they are otherwise not getting, and kind of find the community through these hard times that they're going through.
All right. Is this something you want to move on in your career with, or is this just something you're interested in, or why'd you get involved, I guess is what I'm asking.
So this actually kind of relates to Amber's story a little bit, and how she was talking about the difficulties of kind of finding a physician who's listening and advocating. My primary career goal is to be a physician assistant and kind of go into that medical field. And actually, my mom, when she was a child, she she's so strong, but she had the unfortunate circumstance of getting hit by a car and having a traumatic brain injury from it. And I've seen firsthand how difficult it's been for her to navigate kind of the healthcare system and just kind of finding support in going to the doctor's office, and you wait months for this appointment, and you have 15 minutes and they say, okay, here, try this new medication, go have fun with it. And so kind of my goal with going into medicine is not just to, yes, I know I'm going to have limited time with these patients, but to know those resources that I can give people and say, hey, I'm only here with you for this amount of time, but there's this resource that you can go find, and you can find support through these difficult times.
No, that's actually a great approach to it. You don't see it very often, you know, and I'm in the landscaping business, and every once in a while I get somebody that wants to be an architect that wants to come work in the field and actually see yeah. how it's done. So they have mm-hmm. a concept. So that I respect that quite a bit. And so do you deal with volunteers also? Do you help get people in door? Is there many opportunities for volunteers? Can people call?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, if you look up our website, alz.org, there's a little volunteer subheading. There's two main subsections of our volunteers. So we have kind of those support group facilitators. So helping, you know, getting people together and talking about the situations that they're having going on at home, or maybe when they go to the doctor's office, and helping people find that community and support. And then there's also, we have education classes. And so there's a lot of volunteers, like Amber was saying, she helps with some of those education classes and giving those caregivers the resources and kind of information they need to help their loved ones.
Okay. And have you got much into the support angle of this, or are you just doing other kind of volunteer work with the group, or?
So I actually am a brand new volunteer and intern. So I'm kind of getting thrown into it. Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
But a little bit of everything, a lot of that. Awesome. I've been to a few education classes. I haven't had the opportunity to go to a support group yet. I also spent a lot of time out in the community doing boothing and stuff and getting those resources out there. So not only am I supporting on the back end, making sure that these things happen, but also making sure people know that they're going on and what right. opportunities they have.
And I think we were talking about earlier, that is probably the hardest thing, and where I see most things fail, is when people can't get that information. So that's to me one of the most important jobs of any group, is to be able to get out to the community and let them know what you're doing, because you can have support groups, but if nobody shows up to them, they're then they're useless. And you could tell just by the caller that we, the one caller we did have, was, you know, the information's not always readily available. Sometimes it's a little easier than you think, but it's finding it and having someone like you, that, especially as volunteers, just to get out there. And the more, the merrier, in my opinion. You know, I do a lot with volunteering, and the more people you can get spreading that word, because when people volunteer, they talk about it.
Absolutely.
They're in their social circles, and they go, oh, what's that about? And then it can lead to, you know, word of mouth above all is the best thing, I think.
And I think it's those things, too, where, you know, the you don't know what you need to know until you're in a crisis and you need to know.
Oh, yeah. Right? Like everything, you get that PhD quick.
And, you
know, I think we've all probably had something, no matter who's out there listening, that some kind of tragedy in your life where you have to go literally go get that PhD in a week or two, and you're constantly learning. And a group like this, if this is the case, or whether it's cancer or whatever it may be, if you can attach to this and learn from this, and I think some of the things we talked about earlier was just being able to go to these groups and talk to somebody on the phone that can tell you what to expect, or can tell you, here's some answers, here's the little things, like, you know, like, hey, we're going for a ride, whatever it may be, because I know the frustration and those things sometimes can be overwhelming, and you don't use the most critical thinking skills at that point.
And you know, there, we, again, it's like when you get to a crisis, but then there's also that piece of denial, you know, whether it's the person who's dealing with whatever disease process, or it's the family around it. And, you know, a lot of times I see both sides for people. It's like, hey, I want to educate myself and I want to know all about it. Whereas like other folks are like, okay, just tell me this little bit, because I can't handle like the thought of this being a progressive disease and then it's going to be the end of a person's life, you know, and how do you plan for those things?
So we are going to run out of time pretty quickly. I want to hit this Wise Women and Wine this Sunday one more time, if somebody wants to take the lead on that.
So this Sunday, April 19th, 1 to 3 at J. Ducey Winery, we've got 9 different wineries who are going to be pouring tastes for everyone for $50 a ticket. Amber Pepito, who's been on the air here with us, is going to be speaking, as well as Dr. Oz Ishmael, who's the director of our Alzheimer's Association Scientific Program. So it's a wonderful cause. It's going to be great people involved. Lovely afternoon is what the weather sounded like, too.
Absolutely. So go online, look it up, and you can get there at the door, too, buy tickets, and you're in the door. So thank you, ladies.
Thank you so much.
Any
thank
last words? We have a few seconds.
I think just check out our Alzheimer's Association website, alz.org, or our 24/7 helpline, 1-800-272-3900.
All right. Thanks and so Barry will be back next week, so tune in.